Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The View From Here. I'm your co-host, Jeff Milchin, along with Steve Kirchhoff. And today we're welcoming our guest, former Montana State Representative and Bozeman resident, Brady Wiseman. A software engineer by trade, Brady served in the Montana House of Representatives from 2005 to 2010. Brady also has worked on Wall Street, in the pharmaceutical industry, and is currently involved with a Fortune 50 company building cloud software. Through these varied experiences, he's developed expertise in politics, economics, finance, and energy. Brady is almost, but not quite, living the life of a private citizen as his wife, Cindy, has just finished a term as the mayor of Bozeman and will serve a second term 2 years from now. Thank you for joining us today, Brady.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Reminder, you're listening to KGVM 95.9 FM in Bozeman. So, Brady, maybe we could start off by just telling listeners what first motivated you to run for office in Montana. What was that experience like for you?
Well, that goes back a ways. Back in the early 90s, I was involved with an environmental effort to stop a plan to burn railroad cars full of toxic waste at the headwaters of the Missouri River. And longtime Bozeman residents will remember that controversy. And through that effort, I wound up spending a season lobbying in the Montana legislature in 1993. At the same time, my father was a freshman member of the Montana House from Great Falls. So, and he was a pretty conservative Republican. So during that effort, during that period of time, spending a lot of time at the legislature and having the inside track with my father being a member, I wound up meeting a lot of people, a lot of legislators, and talking with a lot of legislators. And it suddenly occurred to me that this was something that I could do. And, you know, fast forward 10 years, I had an opportunity to run. So I did. Lost my first election, but won the next three. And my basic motivation was believing that I could make a difference. And after three terms in the House, I was disabused of that notion. And so I decided to give it up. And that's the short story, behind which there's longer stories.
So when you say you were disabused of that notion, what were some of the obstacles that you ran into in trying to make the kind of changes that you sought to make, Brady?
Well, I was believing that bringing good ideas backed by good arguments would carry the day. And it doesn't. The Montana legislature is a microcosm in some ways of national politics, and the amount of vituperation and anger there, it was unbelievable. I mean, it was, in my experience, it was smash mouth, scorched earth politics from the very first hour that I was sworn in, from my very first day. Smash mouth, scorched earth politics. And the people behind that didn't really care about the damage that they caused. And they, I believe, don't really care about the welfare of the people of the state. And that's a problem. So, and I couldn't change that. You know, I couldn't, I got engaged in it. I wound up being a warrior for my side. I was certainly guilty of saying some things that I shouldn't have said and having attitudes that were not healthy for me or for the institution, and I didn't see a way that I could change that. And it was wound up being very difficult for me after each three sessions coming home. I had a lot of problems. You know, it was coming down from that ordeal was very difficult for me. So I finally decided that it was not in my best interest or in the best interest of the community for me to continue contributing in that way.
So is it, this is Steve Kirchhoff, by the way. Good day to KGVM listeners. So Brady, would you say it's a matter of an individual going to the big house to see if you can rearrange some of the interior makeup of the big house, but then being changed by the big house itself?
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely not Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. You know, by the way, that is that the right movie? Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Yeah.
Was modeled after a Montana senator. You know, that's our local story of that. And it doesn't work that way. The institution has its momentum and its factions, and it doesn't really desire to change. And the folks that succeed by being aggressive, by being hostile, succeed. And so there's nothing to really change that at this point.
So it sounds like you soured on elected politics.
Soured. That's a good word. Soured on the partisan aspect of it, because it was hugely partisan. I mean, it was not a matter of people sitting down to reason together to find solutions to problems. It was a matter of might makes right, and one side succeeding by being aggressive, hostile, angry, and insulting.
Is it important to know how that gets started? I mean, is it important for you when you look back on that experience to like come up with more or less an analytical way of saying, well, this is how all this fighting gets arranged? The ringmasters may not be visible, but they're the ones who are encouraging all this bad behavior.
Well, there is the in the larger picture of how our government works, about how we choose to govern ourselves, because we do. There have yet to be consequences for this behavior, right? There's no electoral consequences, no matter how bad it gets. So, as an example, before I arrived in 1999, I guess I first started in 2005. In 1999, we had the most disastrous public policy ever in this state, which was electrical deregulation. There were no consequences for that, for having that jammed down our throats. It was literally a last minute backroom deal that was run through the legislature in the last of the 4 months that it meets every alternate winter. And my father was still serving then. He voted for it. It took him years to admit that that was a bad mistake. And we now have, our power rates are now double what they were before we started. We went from being the cheapest in the region to the most expensive in the region, more or less. And yet there were no consequences for that. And, you know, that is a whole conversation involving energy and how it works in this state, which is very complicated. But the folks that did that, you know, promised pie in the sky and delivered something completely different, massive consequences, some level of deindustrialization in Montana because of that, and to this day, no consequences for that. The people that carried that bill still in the legislature today.
Brady, well, I would just like to say thank you for your service.
Well, you're welcome.
I think it took its pound of flesh, right?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Here we are after the fact in the year 2020, and they say that 2020 is perfect vision, particularly with hindsight. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
So looking back on it, is there something that you would have calculated differently in your own personal conduct, in your own actions, anything that might have tipped things for in favor of a different outcome?
Looking back, I would say no. You know, I went into it in good faith with and, you know, feeling good about myself and being able to present ideas. And literally, as I said, from the first hour, it was a smash mouth, scorched earth. I had no concept of that. I wasn't ready for that. It was really, and I reacted in ways that many humans would. You know, I met anger with anger in some cases, many cases. Could I have done anything differently at that time in my life? No. If I were crazy enough to go do it again, I believe that I have now gained enough wisdom that I could do it differently. But I don't have any plans. In case anybody's wondering, no, I'm not doing that until something major changes in how Montana works.
So any thoughts on how that could change? Because you're not talking just about the common paradigm of, you know, corporate money and influence and the power of big money to get people elected and keep them elected. You're talking about something a little more dysfunctional beyond the influence of money, if I'm interpreting
right. Yes and no.
Right?
the dysfunction is there, but underneath, you know, Steve, you talked about the ringmasters. Mm-hmm. It's money that's driving this. It is money that gets these people elected. It's money that keeps getting them elected. That's why there's no consequences, because of the money that drives this. And the folks that are bringing in the dark money have their desires. I mean, typically we would say a conservative, you know, right wing, libertarian corporate money wants what it wants from Montana. And they want to harvest what we have. They want to not pay us for it. They want to not pay taxes. They want to have free reign to do what they want without any law and order, which is, by the way, every time you hear the word regulation and overregulation, you should substitute in your mind law and order. When we legislate the behavior of people in the criminal realm, we call that law and order. But when we regulate the behavior of large businesses, we don't. But that's what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. We need to bring law and order into this. So the money, the dark money, we've had our struggles. You know, Montana was a leader 120 years ago because of the corruption that we, the massive corruption that we had in the late 1800s in this state. We have popular election of U.S. senators in this country because of what happened in Montana in the 1890s. And that was all about money and corruption and money, the wealthy few buying what they wanted. Well, that's all back now. And so there's two aspects to it, though, and I want to be careful to distinguish. The money works to elect people, but it doesn't necessarily need in this state to literally corrupt them. I mean, 120 years ago, there was literal bribery, literally bags of money going over the transom of hotel rooms in Helena. Mm-hmm. Well, now that doesn't happen. And I want to be very clear about this. The legislature in Montana is not corrupt in that way. I mean, people are not getting paid off, but they are getting elected. And what happens is the money, having now had 40 years of conservative, I will say the word, propaganda, they just go out and find true believers and then elect them. Mm-hmm. And the more aggressive among them rise to the top. And there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, you have the money getting what it wants in this state in many ways. Now, we still have a very large faction group of people in the state who resist that. And they generally have a D behind their names. You know, God bless Governor Bullock for fighting dark money through the most recent iterations. Unfortunately, that has failed in the Supreme Court, as many of us understand who follow this. So we're stuck. You know, we have this wave of money. We don't have a good way to stop it. And that money is buying policies.
Mm-hmm. Well, this information, although it might not be new, has a dispiriting character to it. One of the major motivations for Jeff and me to be on KGVM 95.9 mm-hmm. Bozeman is to empower citizens.
And that is great. It's fantastic that you folks are engaged with this, you know, basically citizen-powered radio station to talk about this. The reason that this whole trend continues is that there's no discussion of it in the media. The corruption's invisible for the most part. And the money buys what it buys, and part of what it buys is the mass media. I mean, even the so-called liberal cable TV channels, which I think is a joke, they're not liberal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just watch the commercials. Who's buying those shows? They never discuss those companies. Pharmaceutical companies, as a good example. Many multi-million dollar ad campaigns for drugs that we don't need. And then the news stations are prohibited by the economics of it from investigating the corruption raining down from the pharmaceutical industry. You know, they buy our Congress. Mm-hmm. And yet that's never discussed on the so-called liberal cable TV shows. So if we can discuss it here and put it out on our low-power transmitter...
It's not low-power.
Great. It's not.
I made the mistake of saying that once.
It's not. Oh, excuse me.
I was corrected.
And through the web, it is global reach. So we're putting it out there, and I think you guys are doing a great service.
Also, I feel that there's a certain amount of mental paralysis that occurs even among people who are able to perform the brightest diagnosis of the problem of corruption, can identify the channels that it operates through, can see its influence, and can reveal it to others. The next step is how does a community, how do individuals group together? How do we collaboratively make our voices heard?
Right.
If elective politics are in some sense a dead end and so beaten down by, you know, by gridlock, what are the other channels that citizens can take? How else can we find a common voice and have it heard?
Right. Well, the way our politics is organized, we do that through individuals. And we've had individuals recently that have stood up to the machine, Brian Schweitzer, as our governor, who ended his term 7 years ago, would stand up and rail on these people. And got away with it because he was just a giant personality, is a giant personality, imbued with charisma, and he could pound on these people. Our current governor, Steve Bullock, is another shining light of standing up to corporate money, and we need to congratulate him and thank him for that. Although his term is ending in one more year, as we speak here in January of 2020, in December. 48 weeks from now, he's done. And because we're focused so much on personalities rather than programs, we need to find the personalities that can carry the day.
So any thoughts here in Montana specifically about what average citizens can do to try start shifting that paradigm, Brady?
Well, I believe that the changes that we need are going to start at the grassroots level. There is, at this point, little hope that we're going to see big change at the national level. But locally is where we have the most influence. And, you know, we see, even in Montana, we see huge emphasis on federal offices, on our U.S. Senate, which are important, and our congressional delegation. But what matters more to everyday life of everyday people is what happens in our legislature and even at the county and municipal levels. People are asking me for advice. My current advice is local matters. You know, our ability to influence the national situation is small. Even though we have outsized influence in the United States Senate, that doesn't come up very often. And what does come up over and over again are municipal races, county races, and legislative races, and even governor.
Tell me how this works. Let's imagine that right now McFarland on the Gallatin County Commission, one would call him at least a moderate progressive.
Right.
What if he were joined by another person who was of a like mind? So we had two out of three progressives on the Gallatin County Commission. Well, you're saying that local matters. And how might a progressive Gallatin County Commission start to have influences even beyond the borders of Gallatin County? If I'm taking your meaning.
Well, the state watches Gallatin County. The state watches Flathead County, because these are the two fastest growing counties. And, you know, we're the polar opposite of Flathead County, which is growing more and more conservative as time goes by. The county offices matter in a huge way for a lot of reasons. What a lot of people don't take into account is that those are full-time paying jobs in that courthouse. So the county commission, the county attorney, the sheriff, right down the line, full-time paying jobs. And those folks, as elected officials, elected on a partisan basis, have the wherewithal to grow the pie in terms of political influence. So who's in the courthouse matters. And in our particular case, and you understand this is a very delicate discussion for me at the moment, we have big problems with planning. Because of our massive growth, we have big problems with planning. The county commission has chosen not to engage in that for years and years, all through the massive growth of the county over literally the past 20 years. And there are many people that think that needs to change. When we had that new member elected as a Democrat, which was 13 months ago, that was a shock. Nobody saw that coming. Nobody. He replaced a multi-term incumbent whose father had been a multi-term county commissioner. You know, that old school dyed-in-the-wool, old-time Gallatin County family got booted, and nobody saw it coming. So that it was the biggest bright spot that we've seen locally in some years. That, and you're seeing the same thing happening in legislative races where you have more moderate or progressive folks getting elected outside the Bozeman city limits, or having constituencies outside the Bozeman city limits. So yeah, that can happen. It could happen in this election cycle. 10 months from now, we have an election, and that that seat could flip. And if it does, because it's now an open seat, the incumbent has chosen not to run for re-election. So if that county commission changes hands, then you will see a probably a major change in county policies.
And do you think that what happens in Gallatin County, it's being watched by?
Oh, sure. Everybody in Helena.
Party member statewide.
Absolutely.
But let's just think it through step by step. So Gallatin County starts to do more intensive land use planning, starts to pay attention to its growth issues, mm-hmm. To listen to sort of like a bottom-up mm-hmm. feeling, because I believe mm-hmm. that a lot of the electorate, people in general, have deeply mixed feelings about growth.
Right.
While they can see the benefits, they can mm-hmm. see the positives, they're also living every day with the negatives.
Right.
So imagine that Gallatin County goes more progressive. Does this sort of have a ripple effect out to Broadwater County? Does it go to Marr County? I mean, how does the influence actually spread on the landscape?
Well, here's one example. There are many, many statewide organizations that have meetings in Bozeman because we're drive time. We're in the middle of the state. They have them also in Great Falls and in Helena. But there's a lot of folks that meet here just having that happen. You know, where people come to our town from all over the state and they're exposed to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. So that will work. I mean, an example much closer to home, 18 years ago, in the early 90s, the Bozeman City Commission started doing progressive stuff. And one of the first things was the sign ordinance, over which there was a huge battle, right? And out in Belgrade, there was a lot of laughter. Say, we're not doing that. Well, guess what? Now they are, because they've seen what it does. They've come to Bozeman, and you can drive around in Bozeman and see the mountains, and that that has an effect. The outcomes that we have from coffee's done. There's a little beep in the background here. The outcomes that we produce here, many of them are visible, and that is contagious, mm-hmm. in my mind.
Right.
So the people do pay attention, and folks in Helena at the top of the political hierarchy are very much paying attention to what happens in Gallatin County.
So Brady, I just want to ask, given your interest in energy and having mentioned the 1999 electric deregulation by the state legislature and the mm-hmm. negative impacts from that, what are your thoughts on the current controversy regarding the monopoly of Northwestern Energy seeking to have taxpayers pay for an increase of its ownership in the Colstrip Unit 4 coal plant?
Well, that whole subject is deeply complicated. Let me ask you my favorite question about energy in this state. How many power companies are there in Montana that send a bill for a meter? Any idea?
I only get one bill.
Right, there you go.
I would have guessed one.
One? There's 31.
Wow.
There are 31 power companies in this state. And most of them are small electric co-ops. They don't generate power, but they run power systems. So there's 31. And that is an intense amount of balkanization for 1 million people. Right. So and here's the underlying dynamic of how it works. The electric power cooperatives in this state, which serve all the territory that Northwestern does not. Northwestern serves most of the cities, the urban areas, and except for, I don't believe they're in Kalispell, but they serve the urban areas. That's the way they grew. Started in Butte, of course, and it was an offshoot of Anaconda, Helena, Great Falls, Bozeman, Billings. That's their territory. And the electric co-ops were not served by the old Montana Power Company. And in the 30s, the Roosevelt administration had a policy of rural electrification. And those consumer co-ops in this state, 30 of them, more or less, were started by the federal government, started and funded by the federal government. And they get, most of them, get federally subsidized power. But even that is balkanized. West of the Continental Divide, they're on BPA. They get BPA power. East of the Continental Divide, they get, along the High Line, there's power coming from what is called WAPA, which is the Western Area Power Administration, which runs the dams on the Missouri River. And then there's two other segments that get varying degrees of subsidized power. And those are now the red counties. And the those power cooperatives are democratic organizations. They're run, they're owned by their members who consume the power, and they elect their own boards of directors, and they're immune from regulation by the Public Service Commission. And the dynamic is that it works this way. If you talk to those people and say, well, what's it like being a member of a publicly owned power cooperative, power company, they'll bristle at the notion that it's publicly owned. They bristle at that. No, it's not. It's a co-op, they'll tell you, right? It's goofy the way they think about it. And if you ask them, what's it like having a reliable supply of federally subsidized power, they'll bristle at that, saying it's not subsidized. Well, it is.
So the cooperatives are run by boards of directors who purchase on the spot market.
Well, they
get a subsidy from the federal
yes
government.
And no. A number of them are wired by law into the federal power organizations. Bonneville Power Administration is run by the federal government. And the co-ops west of the Continental Divide in Montana get power from BPA. Along the High Line and eastern Montana, some of the co-ops are wired by law into WAPA, the Western Area Power Administration, and they get power from there. They have an allocation. They get that power. It's not, there's no bidding. Mm-hmm. They have an allocation, and their price is set by the federal organization, and that price is less than what we pay. Right? It is. Mm-hmm. So, other co-ops don't enjoy this, and they buy power on the spot market. And now the allocation of federal power is now, all of that is fully allocated. There's no extra, so those co-ops do have to buy other supplies on the market. But the baseline power that they have, many of them, comes from the federal government. Now I'm hedging because there's 29, 30 of these co-ops, and they're all a little bit different. But for the most part, this is the way it works. And people don't realize this. So you have the red counties that are secure in their power supply, immune in some ways from the free market.
About how many people are served by these 30 or so?
I think it's that's hard to understand because the power companies count customers, which is meters. They don't count population. Mm. So I think it's that Northwestern Energy, the successor to Montana Power, serves a little over half the state. And the other portion served by the co-ops. But what happens is that the members of the legislature from the red counties who have this co-op power behind them wind up walking arm in arm with Northwestern for whatever Northwestern wants. And it's remarkable to see. And they cannot deal with the fact that they have federally subsidized power and that they have publicly owned power companies. They just don't see it that way. And so you have this weird coalition in the legislature of the representatives from publicly owned, federally subsidized power companies giving Northwestern whatever it wants because they don't have any consequences. They don't have consequences because their people aren't served by Northwestern. See how that works?
I do.
So you have people that, as we discussed earlier, are elevated and funded to get to the legislature many times because they are true believers in the conservative business cause. And they don't understand their own economic situation in many cases, refuse to understand it.
Like they're looking into a concave mirror.
Yeah, exactly.
Their own interest perhaps shrinks.
Exactly. Right? Well, their own perceived interest. But they are politicians, and they do understand consequences for doing stupid stuff, even though the consequences that we discussed pretty minimized, really, in this state. Right. When it comes to taxes and the tax structure, mm-hmm. and so on. But when it comes to energy, we have this incredibly balkanized system. We have a major player for those of us who are on it, which is a monopoly, a regulated monopoly. And they make common cause with Red County legislators who enjoy publicly subsidized, publicly owned power, but wind up saying, oh, we shouldn't have all this regulation. Mm-hmm. Even though it is well understood in economics that a monopoly...
They have no interior sense of like cognitive dissonance when they do all this.
Right, exactly. None. Now, there was a bright spot that happened this past legislature in April last year, 2019, at the end of the session. There was a really, really bad bill that Northwestern was trying to shove through in which they would be able to buy a portion of Colstrip for a buck, which they wound up doing. But the bill they were promoting said that portion of their power supply would be immune from regulation by the Public Service Commission. Our Public Service Commission, five members from statewide, are the people that decide how to regulate our monopoly and provide them with a guaranteed profit balanced by power rates for the rest of us that are affordable. And that hasn't been working too well lately. We could certainly use some new faces on that Public Service Commission. And locally, dare I say it, we have one bright star named Tom Woods, who will be running this in this 2020 cycle, who could change one of the faces that needs to be changed and bring some better representation of the rest of us to that commission. The other element of the Public Service Commission is that the five members are elected statewide, including elected from the red counties that are not served by Northwestern. So those members don't have consequences back home mm-hmm. when they allow Northwestern to run roughshod over us. So to finish the story, the bill ultimately failed, even though it was on greased rails and ready to pass. The governor had let it be known that he would let it become law, which I had a big disagreement with him about. And thus, we would be saddled with unregulated costs in the power portfolio where Northwestern could charge us whatever they wanted without any intervention by the Public Service Commission, which throws the whole idea of regulated monopoly out the window. And at the last moment, on the last vote, somehow, for reasons that still have not been well explained to me, a whole bunch of Red County legislators said no and changed their votes. And the bill went down. So that was a happy moment where, mm-hmm. for some reason, the very conservative legislators, I've heard varying explanations for this. One of them was that, well, they just decided it was too much corporate welfare, which is exactly what it was. And that's great. So now, as we sit here 8 months later, Northwestern has bought or is planning to buy that piece of Colstrip for $1. You got to wonder, why would a multi-million dollar installation be sold for $1? And the answer is the cleanup. That facility is at the end of its industrial life. And it was built in the 70s with a lifetime span at that time of 30 years. We're beyond that, well beyond that now. It has to be shut down and decommissioned. And it is going to happen. There's four plants. Colstrip 1 and 2 have already been shut down. 3 and 4 are on the verge of it. And to this day, nobody has presented our Public Service Commission, our elected officials, or our legislature with a plan to clean it up. And most notably with the answer to the big question, how much is that going to cost?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The current back of the envelope estimate is $600 million. Based on my years of experience watching how government works, double that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to cost $1 billion in my estimation to clean up Colstrip. And who's going to pay? Right. There are various owners of Colstrip, current and past, the big utilities on the West Coast were major owners and when it was built. So you have West Coast utilities that are trying to shed themselves of it. They don't want to pay for it. They don't want to come up with $1 billion. The bonding that's in place is inadequate because that is the nature of how Montana works. We don't require adequate bonds for cleanup of industrial facilities. So there's a big question, who's going to pay? And the obvious victims are the customers of Northwestern Energy. And that's the big thing that's in play now that is not being well discussed. Unfortunately, our newspapers in Montana are facing the same problems that newspapers everywhere in the country are facing, and they're not reporting on this. They can't. It's too complicated. It's too expensive to report on this. So how do we deal with this? Where is the information coming from? How is this whole mess moving forward?
Where is the best information, Brady?
Well, that's a good question.
Let me just take a moment. I want to remind folks you're listening to KGVM 95.9 FM in Bozeman and streaming online at kgvm.org. Welcome back to The View from Here with your hosts Jeff Milchen and Steve Kirchhoff. Our guest this episode is Brady Wiseman.
Brady, just to follow up, you said that we are suffering from lackluster media, lackluster information, incomplete reporting on a very detailed and important issue.
Right.
Where can we find good information?
Well, the institutions that have the power to get it are the Public Service Commission and the legislature, both of which are under the control of the business party, the party of big business, and they don't care to do their jobs. They're not doing their
job. The party of big business?
Well,
there's only one.
That's the leading party of big business.
So
yeah,
is the Public Service Commission not required by law to get this information about projected cleanup costs from the company?
I don't know that. The specific answer to that question, are they required by law? The answer is yes, probably, but their execution of that is up to the elected members, the five of them, who at this point are all Republicans and have been very lackluster in very passive in terms of regulating Northwestern Energy. So the big question that we all need to understand is how much is going to cost to clean up Colstrip, right, which is the biggest industrial facility in the state, and who's going to pay? And these questions are not being asked, really, except by a few stars of the public interest. I would call out my friend Ann Hedges at the Montana Environmental Information Center and her executive director, Jim Jensen. They have been hell on wheels on electricity and regulation and so forth in this state. And if anybody out there is looking for a place to donate to a good cause, MEIC does great work for the people of the state.
And do they maintain a web presence?
So MEIC, certainly.
Yeah, if I was seeking information,
absolutely,
on this, because it's a complicated issue.
Yes, they do. I can't remember if it's MEIC.org. Look for Montana Environmental Information Center. Easy to find.
And in terms of the information, I know I saw some reporting recently about the whole controversy around Northwestern Energy on the Montana Free Press independent news,
yep,
website. Are there some other information sources,
right.
That's
a good point.
You know, not specific to an organization, but broad
yeah,
media sources?
That's a good point. The Montana Free Press is a web-based organization run by a very enterprising reporter who was the star behind the Dark Money documentary. And
John Adams.
And that's another great organization to support if folks are looking about how can we make a difference. Well, reach out to Montana Free Press. They focus on state politics and the state government. That's their focus. And they're doing a good job. They are very even-handed. They interview folks from across the spectrum, and they're not an axe grinding organization. They're there to illuminate the complications of our state government.
I just want to add, I've found them to be a really valuable website as I'm looking at all the candidates,
yep,
for the 2020 elections, both the funding for all the candidates, podcast interviews,
mm-hmm,
with all the candidates,
yep,
for major offices. It's a great resource.
Yep, agreed. Yeah, so So that whole question of energy in the state, I hope I've been able to describe the complication of it, you know, how balkanized it is, how the different forces interact, where the power is, how the coalition works, and how to change that, I don't know. My personal feeling is that the PSC should be restructured so that the members who vote on Northwestern Energy are only the members who represent Northwestern Territory.
Right.
I think that would be a good start to change how that structure works. Now, they regulate other stuff, right? They regulate telephones. They regulate taxi service. They regulate garbage utilities. So it's not just electricity. But the electrical decisions they make are the bulk of the work. That's the bulk of the staff, and their budget is going into regulating Northwestern. My view is that the members who vote on those matters should only be the members who represent Northwestern Territory.
Mm-hmm. And that would take a simple majority of the state legislature to pass such a law to restructure that?
That is statute, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so there's an idea for you.
All right. So, Brady, stepping back to a little broader picture for a moment, you read and write a lot about the problems posed by corporate power over our elections, governments, mm-hmm. and our lives. What are your thoughts in the bigger picture about how do we confront some of these problems?
Well, that's difficult, and that is can be a very depressing topic because the interlocking forces are in place now. The money is running our government in Washington, and they now have in place the judiciary who could change it and unlikely to in the future. You know, how do we overcome that? We'd go back to what I said. The real change is going to start from the grassroots, and changing who we elect to represent us locally is what is in our power to do, to change. And that is where our efforts are better spent, even though we all get wrapped up in the national elections and the federal offices, and the political parties focus a lot on those offices because United States Senate seats are very precious, and we have two for a million people as opposed to two for 30 million people in California. So we get wrapped up in that, but the real action is in our cities, in our counties, in our state. And that's where we can make a difference. And we don't need, that's where people power can make a difference and triumph over money power.
Right. So when it comes to the Supreme Court, just to throw a little challenge out there, we certainly have a very corporate-friendly Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
Presently.
Yes.
But when we look at the Supreme Court's role in advancing the power of money over elections and government, and especially the power of corporations, I mean, we're talking about layer after layer of Supreme Court decisions dating back more than a century.
That's right.
We had the court deciding the corporations had the right to spend unlimited funds on ballot initiatives in 1976, the Buckley v. Valeo case. We had the court equating spending money to influence election outcomes with constitutionally protected free speech. Right. And as far back as 1886, we had the Supreme Court deciding that corporations are bestowed with constitutional rights.
That's right.
Something never mentioned in the actual text of the Constitution and not supported by any constitutional background.
Well, it seems
a little bit maybe superficial to just look at it through a partisan lens and say the current Supreme Court needs to be changed. How would you
address that? When you say corporate power, I think we need to, that's a little abstract. And it's easy to be angry about, but I think we need to focus on what that means, right? What is a corporation? And I speak as somebody who has owned several. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how does it work? And
Jeff, did you know that we had a corporate bigwig here this morning?
Mine were tiny.
Too. Oh, man.
And
folded. I'm the only one who has it. I'm the only just genuine citizen.
Yeah, yeah.
Just run-of-the-mill guy off the street.
Right. So a corporation is a group of investors who put together their money for common cause. And what is different about the corporate form of ownership versus a partnership, which is what all businesses were when our country was founded, there were no corporations. business people that went into business together were partnerships. And in a partnership, all the partners are liable for the actions of every partner. So they control each other, right? And that going for several hundred years, every accounting firm and every law firm was a partnership. And the partners had a vested interest in keeping their partners from doing stupid stuff or illegal stuff because they individually were liable for the actions of all the partners. That has all changed, and now all accounting firms and all law firms are corporations. And the difference is this. The investors in a corporation are liable only for the amount of their investment. They are not liable for the greater actions of the corporation. So you have this group of investors who together can pool their money and engage in risky propositions, and yet individually they're not responsible for the consequences of those risks. Now, we get a lot of benefits out of that form of organization. We get international airline flights. We get cell phones. We can call anybody on the planet, anywhere. All those are provided by corporations, right, which is the good stuff, right? But the bad stuff is that because of the way that this limited liability aspect of corporations, we wind up with the owners not being responsible. Now, and that is filtered down now. So every Main Street business, they go to their accountant and their lawyer, and they are told, you need to incorporate. And why? To escape liability for greater consequences,
right,
of their business. And that is the core of the problem. And then you have the extra layer where now it has been adjudicated that these groups of investors, who are all ultimately individual human beings, imbued with the same constitutional rights that we all have, that as a group, they also have constitutional rights that are separate from their individual constitutional rights. That's the core of it. And if we want to change how this works, we have to change that, to say that the groups of investors who get this huge benefit, legislated by law, the benefit is limited liability for the actions of the group, then how are they also blessed with the same constitutional rights that the individuals are? That's wrong. Yeah. That is broken. That is the core, I believe, the core issue here.
So I agree that that's really a core issue of our society. And how do we address that? I mean, we have millions of people who think that, yeah, it's reasonable that corporations have rights. They need to be able to do these business deals and engage in contracts without understanding that the privilege of limited liability is something that can only be granted by government. You can't choose to give yourself limited liability.
Bingo. That's exactly it, Jeff.
But that basic concept is one that I'd say 90% of Americans have probably never even thought about.
Right, because even the liberal, so-called liberal cable channels, this stuff isn't discussed.
Of course.
The privilege of limited liability is something that was not granted. The founders of this country hated that because they revolted against the original multinational corporation, which was the East India Company, which monopolized large segments of trade in colonial America. And that was part of what they revolted against. The Boston Tea Party was not necessarily or solely a revolt against the British Parliament, it was a revolt against multinational monopoly trade by the East right. India Company. Those were East India Company ships that they boarded and threw the tea overboard.
And small business owners were a big part of that rebellion.
Exactly. It was merchants that were a part of that. So as we look at it, the issue of limited liability is the core problem. And that is, as you've rightly pointed out, Jeff, a matter of law. The law decided that. The Congress and various state legislators decided that. And it was a slow thing. If you've studied the history of corporations, you know that the founders of this company hated corporations, and business organizations were sole proprietorships. And the only corporate charters that were granted, where you had what was then called a joint stock company, where individuals could invest and were granted, were corporations that were created for a public benefit. And the charters were voted on by state legislators. Each individual corporate charter was a matter of a vote by elected representatives. And they had to demonstrate a public benefit. One of the best examples is the Erie Canal. That was a joint stock company with granted limited liability to create a public benefit, which was a waterway that could carry freight and people across the state of New York and join the Hudson River with the Great Lakes. And that is a really good example. But then we got into the age of railroads, and eventually it all went out the window. And now you can form a corporation in Montana over the internet. And it's remarkable how easy it is to do and create limits on liabilities for a business. And at this, I understand why small people, business people do it, because there's a lot of predatory legal operations that will sue people at the drop of a hat, and which is another thing we need to fix. But all of that can be done by a majority vote of the United States Congress. And a signature by a president. So not a supermajority, not a court case. It can all be done by legislation. And it's a matter of electing a Congress that will do that, which I don't predict in this year of 2020. But if we keep our eyes on the ball, we can move toward that.
Well, throughout there, I previously was involved in a nonprofit called ReclaimDemocracy.org that was focused on that idea of public education to get people to rethink the role of corporations in society and return them to being subordinate entities. There's also now is a national organization, Move to Amend. MoveToAmend.org is their website, really working on building grassroots movement to amend the United States Constitution to make clear that corporations are, as you described it, Brady, entities without inherent rights that are created by
that
the
are
people
granted
and that are subordinate to the people. So for folks who are interested in digging into that more, those are a couple of many great resources out there.
A constitutional amendment would be a way more permanent. The problem with the majority vote of the Congress is that the next Congress can overturn it. And so a constitutional amendment is way more powerful. That would be a big battle because every constitutional amendment is. But I commend what they're doing, the Move to Amend. They're doing grassroots education on this subject, and hopefully that is something that could, what did the kids say? Go viral.
That certainly is. Having been involved in that issue for, probably 25 years, there's certainly a huge difference now compared to many years ago, despite the fact, I mentioned most people still don't consider what exactly a corporation is and the whole concept of limited liability. It certainly has grown significantly over the past couple of decades, thanks to a lot of that grassroots organizing.
Well, the corporate form of business organization is a great way to centralize profits. And we see that over and over again. We're told we're living in a free market, but in this country, in the United States, we're not. We are living in a cartel market in many, many different areas of our lives, whether it's what we plug into in the wall, what our cell phones connect to, where we go for medical care, how we pay for that medical care, automobiles, airlines, many, many aspects, food, many, many aspects of our life. We're living in a cartel economy, not a free market. And that is, again, something that's not widely discussed because the folks that run things don't want that discussed.
Listening to you, Brady, and Jeff, I feel like I'm being educated. I hope I am. I hope that your knowledge is conveying accurately to me. However, as I'm noticing that experience happen, I'm also feeling like the weight of things starting to accumulate on my shoulders.
Right.
And so if I were to take that weight down, because you've laid out sort of many layers of problematic dynamics in our economy, in our society, in people's attitudes, what I get, the sense of weightiness also is felt as a sense of powerlessness, right? And so my thought, my hope that toward the wrap-up of the show is, how do we put that weight down? How do we see it? How do we act on it? Without becoming scholars about the history and the sort of evolution of corporations, just having the knowledge that this is something we should move on, there are so many other things that we feel like we should move on. How can you help me to make sense out of an order to my actions?
Right. Well, the actual way that change happens in this country for the better, change that actually benefits the mass of people, it has only ever come over time with people in the streets. And, you know, in our lifetimes, we recall the 60s and where we had people in the streets to stop the war. We had people in the streets to stop discrimination. And those movements worked to some degree. And the other element that sparks change in this country, in the history of this country, is crisis. And right now, we have most people in the country have been, more or less happy with the way things are going. But you have now large factions of the population that are unhappy. And that's how we got our current president elected, because a lot of people are unhappy with the way things are going. And the opportunities they have to make change are limited. And the way to go forward is to, as I keep saying, at the grassroots. You know, where are you buying stuff? Right. How are you participating in the economy? Who do you buy from? You know, I make it an effort to buy local food and to buy from a community-owned store, our food co-op in Bozeman. Many people complain, well, that's too expensive. And it's like, well, it's more expensive, but I know that there are families in this valley who are surviving, who are making a living in agriculture because of that store. Mm-hmm. And so I support that. There's in other stuff, I can't really buy local. I try to shop in our local retail stores. Our retail economy is having the same problems that it is everywhere else. And, you know, how to deal with that? Hard to say. But the system may provide us with an opportunity that would be unwanted and unwelcome in terms of economic difficulty like we saw in 2008. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, that's the moment to start demanding change and to do the work that it takes to get the change.
Yeah. When it comes to the idea of people in the street, looking back at some of the mass movements in the past, they were successful through these kind of mass public demonstrations of public opinion without even necessarily targeting specific institutions or corporations or shutting down the functions of business as usual, because elected office holders clearly were cared about and were influenced by public opinion.
Right.
When we look at the United States Congress today, that doesn't appear to be the case, because obviously, you know, the polls show right now we're going through the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, and overwhelming majorities of the American public, 80% or so, want to see evidence, want to see people testify, and yet the Republican Party is saying no.
Right.
We're not going to have that happen.
Right.
Despite marches, when it comes to, you know, issues like global warming, we're seeing virtually no action whatsoever. So how do you address that disconnect of mass displays of public opinion? How can they make an impact if the majority of a certain party doesn't care about public opinion?
Right. The answer to that is probably a big discussion, and we're kind of short on time here. But the short answer is that it has taken us, you know, over a generation, nearly two generations, to get to where we are now. These things don't change on a dime. These things don't turn right-hand corners at the next intersection. And it will take time and conscious effort to change how this works. And that's a matter of personal choices that individuals make. And the most important personal choices still that are available to us are who we vote for. And as politicians go up the food chain, they are required by the way the system works to make the money happy. But it is in our power now today to vote for people at the lower level offices who are not beholden to the money, and propel them into careers in elective office that will bear fruit down the road. That's something that we can all do today, this year, to make a difference.
All right. Well, good to have a note of positive action to end on.
See? Yeah, I feel far less anxious. My anxiety level was around a 7.5 minutes ago. Yeah, it's a mere 3.
Oh, good. Glad I could help.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Brady.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to The View from Here. Our guest today, Brady Weissman, and you're listening to KGVM 95.9 FM in Bozeman and streaming online at kgvm.org. We'll see you next time on The View from Here.